Welcome to TA1, everything you want to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson, and of course, you can hear, we got the legendary Jimmy. Here, come sit down here because you're annoying. So, got an old school episode this time. I think you're all going to enjoy listening to what Jason has to say about what it was like and what's happening and what's going on in the future. So, yeah, shoot. There. Introduction. That's all we need, right? Any of you that have been interested in Paulette's experiences at the Rebel Rally, video coming pretty quick. Working on it now. So, yeah. It looked like it was fun. And what else? That's it. Going to St. Louis in a couple of weeks for the Castlewood 8-hour. A great little race that Emmett Earl put on down there for Alpine Shop. And, okay, that's it. Go fast. Take chances. Thanks for listening. And bye.
Now you are on mute.
Yeah, it's so confusing. I've done this 100 times and I still fail.
Well, that's more than I have. I was like, you know, when everything started and everybody's using Zoom, I'm like, well, what's that stupid thing?
Yeah, I know.
I realized how great it is for multiple people.
Yeah. I do dance class on a Zoom.
Normally I'm using, you know, Skype or Messenger or, you know, whatever works, but this works good. And actually the sound's pretty good on this usually. So.
Okay, good. You know, I realized I let my kids have the earbuds that actually plug into my computer and these are the ones going on my phone. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, it sounds fine. So, hey.
Hey.
I literally just, well, okay, here's the bad news. I was thinking Thursday, and I come home, and it's like, oh, I have a meeting. So it wasn't too late.
That's all good. Like, I have I have a sleeping puppy, which will hopefully stay sleeping.
So, yeah, Chili is, she's probably drinking water. She can wait till we're done for supper, so.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Well, you can start by saying your name.
All right. My name is Trayson Thayer, and I will say that my adventure racing experience is more at the beginning than in the present.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. OG. You're an OG.
Yeah. Although I will say that my body, you know, every once in a while you get those, like I just did a 31-mile paddle thinking that I'm fine with this. I hadn't paddled for a month and I had to go did laps on a 1.5 mile pond. It was awful, but thankfully that, you know, it's all in the head really.
Well, I mean, isn't that really where adventure racers come from? It's all in the head.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really great thing about the fact that it's, you know, both genders, it becomes physical like right at the beginning, and then a couple days in, it doesn't really matter. It's all head game.
Yeah, that's cool. So why were you paddling 30 miles on the
Well, I was supposed to do this race called the Chattajack down in Tennessee. That was a 31-mile paddle on a river with some help from the current. And then I would say like a month and a half ago, it went virtual. So,
yeah. Well, you can't not do it.
It was exactly the words I was going to say. You took them right out of my mouth. Right. You know, whether I felt like qualified and trained, exactly, you can't not do it. So, yeah.
Do you have a history of doing things that you're not quote unquote qualified for?
You know, I don't really feel like I do too many things that I'm not qualified for, but I will say that you know, like this weekend I'm going to go do a big run with a friend for his birthday. And it's one of those like, oh, it's going to suck or maybe not, because I'm not really ready for it, but I want to do it. You know, it's like all those like conflicts of, you know, my head is in my 30-year-old body, but my body is not in my 30-year-old body. So
yeah,
perhaps I'm not qualified.
So the secret to not worrying about that anymore is just quit racing and start filming and taking pictures.
Well, yeah, I think there's a great career in that.
Yeah, but you never worry about that. Oh, well, I should go do this race, or well, I'll go support them. I'll meet them halfway and take some pictures.
Right,
it's a really great cop out.
Some Cokes and some chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, or well, if you like
me. But I also, you know, don't you feel like there's an interesting transition from like when I was young? I mean, there might have been this sort of level of being naive and thinking you're invincible and doing these events, and the body can recover pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like now I'm just more aware of my body. Yeah. And I don't know as though I'm more or less capable. I'm just more aware of its abilities or lack of abilities.
It's just, you know, you're going to be a little bit miserable Monday morning.
Right. Right. And that's even if the event was on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a few more days, but you survive. So, all right. So let's go back old school. So you did Eco, the original Fiji, right?
No, I did not. No, no. So my first Eco was 96.
Okay. You can go back even farther.
Yeah. I'm like really old.
Yeah. So which one was 96?
That was British Columbia.
Okay. And what got you to the point of saying, I'm going to go do a 10-day race in British Columbia?
You know, like, you know, it's the company that you keep, right? So yeah. I had a friend who was on a team. I lived in North Carolina at the time. I had a friend who was on a military team out of Georgia. And she went and trained with them, and she came back and she was this incredible athlete. Her name was Julie. And she came back to me and she said, okay, there's this team and they need a new woman. And she gives me like the 1-minute spiel, like mountain biking, well, you can do that. And paddling, well, you can work on that. And this and this and this. Can I give me your name? And, you know, like, what do you say? Like, of course, you know, I was like 26 or 7. Yeah. You know, why not? And so I had to go to Montana and try it out for the team. And I got on the team and I didn't really know what I was doing, but there I was. Yeah. And, you know, it was an interesting, I feel like the sport was an interesting place at that point in time. It was a lot more people who were already sort of outdoor people going into the sport to compete, mm-hmm. rather than, and I don't want to discount anyone's credibility or skills at this point. But after a few years of Eco Challenge, there were a lot of teams that got in because you just paid the entry fee and you could be in.
Yeah.
And that was their outdoor experience. They'd never camped out. They've never carried a pack. And it's just an interesting contrast and of capabilities.
Yeah. So 96, was that more, to simplify it, was that more big packs and hiking boots, or were we getting into the running shoes and lightweight?
Oh, no. So there were humongous packs and you're carrying like, okay, well, if I cross the river, I want to put my sandals on and stop and take my socks and my boots off. And maybe I don't want to put my boots on these, or my crampons on these heavy boots. I'll put them on my lighter boots. So it was an amazing, and then, you know, you're sitting on the side of a river and doing this transition, and then some Kiwi team runs by you and they like run through the river without taking anything off. And you're like, oh, okay. So that was a bad plan.
That's how this is supposed to happen.
Right. Exactly.
So what was that, you know, was that your first adventure race then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You might as well go big, right?
Yeah.
But the other part of that was like in 96, what else was there to do? Yeah. There wasn't really anything else. So it was a big adventure. And then you realize like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah. Did you have the fortune to not know what was going on? Because the people now that are, you know, everybody, I've never adventure raced, but I'm going to sign up for Patagonia. And they sort of, you would think they know what's going on, but I mean, you probably didn't have any idea, right?
No, no idea. But I felt like I, you know, I sort of was a lifetime outdoor person. And, you know, when I was young, my parents would, there are 48 mountains in New Hampshire, over 4,000 feet. And like every weekend, they're like, we're going to do another one. And when you're a kid, you're like, can I just go to the beach with my friends? You know, yeah. And then you realize when you're like 17, 18, 19, that you're like, I want to go to the mountains.
So.
And that's sort of my parents' fault, even though I hated them like 10 years ago. So I think that, you know, I think that's sort of the shift though, you know, mm-hmm. there that, you know, there's the sort of the blessing of the curse and the curse. People can go out and do an eco challenge and not have a lot of experience and hopefully be inspired by those that have the experience.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the people smarter than me that have said that eco is actually a good one for beginners because it's so safe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's true. I mean, pretty much any race that you go into is a fairly safe situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, but it's also, I hope that people don't sort of count on that as being their sort of a sense of lack of preparedness.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully they're not going to say, oh, this is too hard. Where's the spot?
Right, right. Where's my helicopter insurance?
So, which is not a bad thing to have.
No, they made you have it in Switzerland.
I did a shot a race there. Yeah, way back. Yeah, but it's cheap, right? I mean, you know,
it's smart. You know, yeah. Why not make people have it?
Yeah, I mean, I always get, you know, travel insurance wherever I'm going. We had, you know, my wife got hurt racing and. You know, I shouldn't say lifesaver, but it was really nice to have that extra insurance.
Pre-planning.
So, I mean, I hate to tell you this, but you're not the first person I've talked to whose first race is a 10-day expedition race and stayed with it.
Right, right, yeah.
And I've always wanted to, and I don't know how I'd ever meet anybody that, you know, their first race was an eco challenge or a primal quest and never did another one.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I basically took the year off and then went to Australia.
So, I mean, was it just when you did that first race, was it just, did you have that? Yeah, this is what I want to do.
You know, I think that anyone that's completed or even people that don't complete it, you get that. Just that, for me, it's the feeling of crossing the finish line. I can watch any event, especially the ones that I've done, that I'm not covered or there's no shot of me. But even when other people have done and have that same feeling of accomplishment and like overwhelming, yeah, I can cry. All that emotion comes out, like because it all builds up over all those days.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to, you know, keep putting one foot in front of the other and. I think that's the drive to try it again. And, you know, you think that, okay, I'm just going to go to this race. I'm going to have a perfect race. And it's never a perfect race. So it's that illusion of like, okay, the next race, you know, my ankle won't hurt or I'll train more for the paddling or the mountain biking, I'll be a little better. And, or we won't screw the navigation up and something always happens and you're like, okay, I'm going to try this again. And you forget, like, maybe how miserable it was. Like, none of it is fun while it's happening.
Yeah.
It's only fun to talk about.
Well, and that's an interesting point. Do you, and I would suspect, is it the joy of doing the race or is it the joy of having done the race?
That's a really interesting question because I think it's both of them. I think like in the moment I think one of the beauties of being in an adventure race is that, you know, so your daily life, you've got like, I got to pay this bill. I got to do this thing, you know, all this stuff. And then selfishly you get in this adventure race and like, really all you have to do is the race.
Yeah.
And not that it's a overwhelming goal, but it's kind of nice. Yeah. Like, okay, all I have to do is like get to the next TA and then hopefully my support crew will have French fries or something.
Yeah.
Delicious. And then I get changed and I get on my bike and I think it was going to be a better leg and it's not. And I just go to the next thing. And then it's miserable. And then you get done and then it's glorious. So I think it's both of those. I think both of those things are, you can escape your world. And then when you're done, you can have this great sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, I get you. So, you know, we're talking about the perfect race. Have you ever, for you personally, have you ever had one that was close?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm really critical of, because there's so many times where it's usually like one woman and three guys, and I'm just trying to like not be that one that's holding up the team. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've always raced with people that are very critical of themselves. So I don't know. I think that because I've never had that, felt like I've had that perfect race. It's like, that's, you know, why do you apply to Patagonia when you're over 50? Like, oh, here we go. Cause I just want to try to do it again.
Yeah. The eternal optimist in you.
Or masochist. I'm not sure.
But how about this? Have you ever had a perfect leg of a race?
Well, I must say, like I've always been in like a pretty good, like a really strong mountain biker as far as like climbing and stuff that's not very technical. Mm-hmm. And one race in the Beast of the East, I was really tired and I really didn't care about the fact that I was going downhill and going down this really technical thing. And I just went for it. And I remember getting to the bottom and my teammates going like, "You've never ridden like that before." And I was like, yeah.
I'm just too tired. Too tired to care.
I'm sure you've had that feeling of being like, it's almost like when you're sleep deprived, it's almost like you're kind of drunk. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, okay, I'm just gonna, I don't want to walk my bike right now. So I'm just gonna go.
Just gonna ride it.
Right.
Yeah. So give me a sense of your career. Because I hate to put it this way, but this is sort of a history lesson episode.
Right.
So
wait, can we pause for a second and let this puppy out?
Yep.
You get to edit all this, right?
No, because this is what people like. Puppies. Oh, okay. Puppies get big ratings.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, she's. Okay.
Yeah.
Winnie. This is the problem when your kids are at their dad's and you have no backup. Your husband's in Alaska, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I've had to take the chili dog out once or twice and.
Yeah. Okay. And, good.
And the birds, I used to let my birds be on the podcast and sit with me.
Oh, well, I was listening to some of your older, like, what do you have for birds?
Jimmy is an Amazon and Stevie's a Senegal. And then I was with Chris Radcliffe and he wanted to listen to some. We were driving and I'm like, those birds are really annoying. So.
Well, you get used to what you know.
Yeah. You know. I think what the problem was is we listened to like 4 hours in a row and they got really annoying.
Yeah. That can be a bit much.
Yeah. So what kind of puppy?
The mom was a German short-haired pointer. And the dad is an English setter. So she kind of looks like a black and white spotted German short hair.
Yeah. And I'm guessing high energy.
Yeah. That's all I wanted was one that ran. But now she's like getting in better shape and is running, needs to run more than I want to run.
Yeah. So Chili was, we ran a lot when she first came home, and now we're just like, let's just go hike all day, and she's cool with that.
Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah. I'm gonna hopefully wear her out on Saturday, but yeah. So you were asking me about
history.
Okay. So I kind of feel like I, you know, kind of done the classics. Like I did a couple ecos. I did the Rey Gawas in Ecuador in 98. I did the Elf Authentic Adventure, which is what Gerard Fusel used to do the raid, and then he went to the Elf. And then what else? I was fortunate to do, I did Beast. Now I'm trying to think of like, did we compete in Odyssey races?
Nope.
No.
And I wasn't competing.
So that's not fair. I did do my research. And then, you know, then I was fortunate to do, I did Raid the North Extreme in Newfoundland a couple times. And I did one of the first Primal Quests, the one in Telluride. And I mean, my thing was like, when I started, I was doing the expedition, the long ones. And so when someone invited me to a 24-hour one, it was like, oh, like I did not shine until about like day three.
Yeah.
So I was definitely about the, you know, the attrition.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, expedition racers that are like you. They don't want to work that hard for a 24-hour race.
Right. And, you know, and I feel like I got, you know, I started having kids in 2003 and kind of got out of the sport where it was when, you know, kind of the, like, maybe more triathletes, like, where there was, you had to start the race and run, mm-hmm. or you weren't going to be in that top bubble. And then you had, there was no, like, just cruising down the trail.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite that athlete. I was all about like, okay, let's do this expedition. I can deal with no sleep, but I can't deal with a really fast and no sleep.
Yeah. You don't have that speed in you, but
this wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
I never ran distance. I was always a ball sport person. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I was on the cross country team and then the Nordic team and then the track team. And I didn't have any of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you have the hiking background. Did you have any, I mean, and then, you know,
I slept a pack, but
yeah, that's what I always tell people. I put a pack on me and a camera and I'll go
right.
all day. But Roy Malone one time said, well, why don't you race? And I said, Roy, you notice I'm never with you on day one or two. It's always after day three.
Right.
There's a puppy.
Yeah, there she is.
What's her name?
Her name's Winnie.
Winnie.
Winifred. Yeah, see, I was going to show you, like, this is the era that I come from.
No.
VHS.
VHS. Well, I'm not real certain that we still have them, but we had all those. Not in the box set, but recorded off of TV.
Oh yeah, I have some of those too. You know, you have like the whatever the outtakes that your parents somehow recorded.
Yep.
And then I don't even know what else I have here. But yeah, there's like a couple of rows in my breezeway of. They'll probably never be watched again. But my mom was really sweet one year. Like took a bunch of them, put them on DVD, and then we uploaded them. And
well, that's kind of fun to have.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I get
I never played football. I feel like adventure racing is like my football years.
that's a good way of looking at it. So,
yeah.
So did you race with the same team or people, or you know, how did that work for you?
Well, you know, I started. I'm trying to think. So I got on a team with, like, from a friend who knew of a team looking for people, and then. So that was British Columbia, five people. I think that was sort of didn't last very long. A lot of people on a team. Yeah. And then Australia was four people. And so we went down, we had pretty much the same team, but without one person for Australia. And then I think like a lot of teams, you sort of start, you race and then you race with other teams and you're like, huh, maybe that guy or that gal would be great to race with. I feel actually fortunate that I raced with, you know, my now ex-husband a bunch, and we were fortunate to race with some Kiwis and a guy from Canada. And that was just what was wonderful about the sport, the community of it and sort of borrowing people. And
yeah. I mean, did you, was that the era where by being a successful woman, you got invited to a lot of teams?
Yeah, definitely. And I probably limited myself a little bit because of who I chose to race with, which was fine. But yeah, but yeah that was definitely a time where there weren't a lot of women in the United States that were that were doing expedition races and were strong. And
So you were a hot commodity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, was it basically having kids slowed the career down?
Yeah, but I think that, like, there were definitely, I would say, like, 2001 and 2 when I would race, and this would happen a lot. I mean, it probably happened my whole, like, career, that you get to the end of the race and I'm like, oh, never doing that again. And then you do it again.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I didn't have my first child till I was 34. So there got to be like a point where it had to happen. So, but yeah, it was a good, I felt like I had made a good mark as feeling successful and accomplishing some goals. And I felt the sport was changing a little bit. And, you know, I felt like I kind of got out of it when it felt like a right time.
So changing was how? In what way do you think it was changing? So like in like that 02 and 03?
Yeah, I felt, you know, again, I felt like it was, I remember being, and this was 98, but I remember being on a bus and, you know, going to the start in Ecuador and sitting like near, it's like a regular school bus.
Yeah.
And one of the guys that was on a media team, who I will not name a name, but, he said, yeah, you know, like I never really even camped out until I did an adventure race. And I thought like, you know, I just was really puzzled from coming from being an outdoor person. It was just really a little bit puzzling. And then I realized, so then I sort of ended my racing career, I was starting a race production company and realized my favorite race to put on was a 3 or 4 day race, but the most popular ones were the 12 and 24 hour races. And sort of had to concede to that and realize like, okay, well, in order to build the sport, you have to start somewhere. You can't start at the
where you did
6 day race. Yeah. You have to start. And so, you know, that was when my mind shifted toward how to market it versus it wasn't how I wanted to participate.
That's interesting. Was that really hard for you to say, but this is what I like to do. Why don't you all want to do it?
Yeah, but you also, I also realized that I was fortunate to have a lifestyle where I could, you know, go out and train 20 plus 30, maybe 30 hours a week. And to realize that, you know, it's that whole thing of like, what is your Everest? Like for me, my Everest might be here, but for some people, their Everest is here. And just sort of accepting that, okay, well, if I have to condense this experience, then how do I make this experience be similar to what my experience was? And which was a whole new challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you do that? How do you make an 8 hour race feel like to the beginner to a 10 day race for you? You know what I mean? How do you try to make that experience?
I'm not sure, but like, I think I felt like if they had no like reference, then that 8 to 12 hour race was going to be hard, really hard. So yeah, it was always a challenge. So how do you challenge the teams that came and were well prepared and you don't want them to finish in 3 hours? But you also didn't want to not have the beginner people finish in the 12 hours.
Yeah. You have a friend, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's.
Oh yeah. There you go. Yeah. This one just knocked out. This one just knocked over everything that I had on the seat.
Yeah. Yeah, you can lay down there. So what raises did you put on?
So we had a company called RaisingAhead.com, and we put on an Appalachian Extreme, which was for 3 years was a qualifier for the AIR World Champs that Jeff Hunt put on. And then I think has since been sold, but I think it still happens. So we had the Appalachian Extreme, and that was 3 or 4 days. And then we had the New England Adventure Race Series. It was 2 12-hours and 1 24-hour. And then in Portland, Maine, we put on a urban race that was 8 hours, which was the maximum finishing time.
Yeah. So those are something nobody ever talks about. The urban races. I mean, they were a big deal for a while.
Yeah. Well, remember like high tech?
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
No.
I never did one. They were too short and fast for me. but I think that they were great for the sport. You know, they got people interested. And like I said, you know, you have to start. It's why, you know, I think it might be sort of the challenge that Eco has trying to, you know, rejuvenate the whole concept is that, you know, all of a sudden there's this adventure race that's really cool. But how many people can actually see themselves doing it?
Yeah, well, if you watch the internet, everybody.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Except for Amazon.
Yeah, well, let's fingers crossed, right?
I know.
It's Hollywood. You never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't ever know. No.
So, was it really just watching Fiji that convinced you needed to get back?
Oh no, not at all.
Okay. Okay, why did you decide you need to come back?
No, I had like, so a week or two after, whenever, I'm trying to remember what the timing was for when right after they released it, right, they opened registration.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did a reality show in 2018 that aired in 2019. And then I haven't really done much of it, you know, just paddleboarded a bunch and whatever. So this guy that used to come to my events is Racing Ahead, and I've raced with a few times in the like 2014-15 USARA stuff. I get this text message and he's like, "So what's your next big thing?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And then at the same time I'm getting these emails from another guy, Dave Lamb, and he's like, "So what are you up to?" And I'm like, well, this is kind of strange. Within like the same hour.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And they're like, well, what do you think about Eco? And I'm like, it takes you like 30 seconds to go like, all right.
Yep.
I'll race with you guys. So that was that.
So
I think that any adventure racer that's not completely broken, I think that, you know, like Mark Macy was a great example of like his head was right there, like thought he could do it. He's just not there physically anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that true adventurers, that desire never dies, whether it can play out, we never know, but yeah. I don't know as though that desire ever goes away.
Yeah.
Whether it's logical or not.
Well, of course it's not logical. There's not one thing about this sport that's logical.
Well, that's true.
So, let's talk a little bit about the brigade.
Oh, yeah.
Was it fun?
So what's really interesting about that is like, there's like this selfish part of one's, you know, like, okay, I did all this adventure racing and I was great or whatever, you know, personally, at least I thought I was, and my family always told me I was, and, you know, and nothing came of it, which is fine. It's not why you do it. You do it for the experience. And so I guess it was 2018, I had an old clothing sponsor of mine, John Darbaloff of the Rail Riders, call me, and he's like, "Hey, I got this casting director and they have this show and they called me for some reason and I thought of you." And it's just like when you get called about doing, you know, applying for a challenge. You're like, all right, go on. And he gave me the casting director's name, and I spoke with her, and I applied, and like everything just fell into place. And I really felt like it was one of those things, like, you know, just sort of like a ticket from having all done all these things in my life. And it's like, okay, now I have this great opportunity just because I met some great people.
Well, I mean, that's kind of, I don't want to say adventure racing is networking, but it is kind of networking. You meet all these cool people that do all these cool things, and you just never know where it's going to take you. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was doing crappy little videos for my wife's team for Primal Quest Badlands, I didn't know I was going to be doing a podcast 12 years later or whatever.
Right. No. And that's what was just really wonderful about it. Like, it's just a great lesson. Like, if you have a sponsor, treat them well,
yeah.
Be grateful. And you just never know how that's going to pay back some time down the road. Like, you know, just treasure all the connections that you make. And so the executive producer ended up being, Alan Bishop, who's, he was a great friend of Jim Mandeli, who was someone I raced with. And so when we had the interview, it was really fun, and we hadn't spoken to each other since 1999. And then, you know, I got to Castlegar, and they get it narrowed down to 10 people. And I don't know who is on the cast at all. I know it's 5 Americans and 5 Canadians, and they won't let us talk to each other. And we have to like let the production assistant know, like, I'm going to get a sandwich. Like, okay, let me know when you're back. And they're like, don't talk to anybody in the hotel if they look like they're part of the production. And everybody there was part of the production. So then we have our first meeting, and we're all sitting in a circle, and we're not supposed to talk to anybody. And we're like, you know, going over the rules and the signs. And I look and I see Don Mann.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, what are the chances out of 10 people that I'm going to know somebody?
Yeah.
I haven't seen in, you know, whatever it was, you know, 18, 20, almost 20 years. Yeah. So that was really fun.
Yeah. Which, you know, brings us back to connections. Don Mann was race director.
Right.
He said, hey, do you want to produce a video for this? Because we don't have anybody else.
Right. So. Yeah, he did a ton for the sport.
Yeah. So. Hey, Don, you're supposed to be on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you had him?
No, it's been an ongoing for like 4 years of like, yeah, let's do it. We'll set it up. And then a year later, like, hey, we never did that, did we? Yeah, let's set it up. So
yeah, he's a little bit like that.
Yeah, and he's a little busy. So he's not like some people where I email him a week ago and say, hey, let's do a podcast.
Yeah,
that would be you.
Yeah, I know. No, that was great though.
So
I'm clearly booked all the time.
Yeah, well, I understand that too. Yes, you're ready to go outside too. Gotta wait a while. So what was you know, the brigade was it a competition? Okay, here's the thing. I watched about 4 episodes, whatever year it was, while I was at C2C. Because I'd be sitting there editing at night, and it would be in the background. So I never saw the finish of it. But.
So the premise of it was kind of cool. Like, can you take 10 people who don't know each other, put them in a 29-foot canoe, and have them accomplish a goal in 28 days, basically? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the difference between that and adventure racing is usually with adventure racing, at least you're sort of picking your teammates. Yeah. You have some idea of what the personalities you have to deal with. So I wasn't really that stressed about, like, can I paddle every day for 8, 10, 12, 14 hours? I wasn't really, like, I know I could do that.
Yeah.
But, like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Right, like, you know, that was the biggest challenge, were the personalities that were on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it got, you know, when people get tired and bored, or, you know, then all of a sudden everything is like way bigger than it needs to be. Like, okay, someone lost the top of the percolator in the river, and now we can't make the coffee. You know, you can't, you know, when people aren't smoking cigarettes or doing tobacco or drinking beer, but, you know, like coffee was our habit.
Yeah.
So, okay, now what do we do? You know, and so it's just like things like that. Like you get mad at that person or you just try to figure out what you're going to do about it. And, you know, just all those. It really wasn't about the paddling. The paddling, yeah. When we all could, just like an adventure race, when you have a task and you're all doing it, everything kind of goes pretty well.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting in camp and people are trying to figure out who's going to sleep where and why is this person not doing the dishes, it was their turn and, you know.
Was it set up that way? Do you think, I mean, did they try to not mesh personalities? Or did it just end up being that way?
Well, I imagine that the cast was picked for whatever reason, yeah. You know, and I think that they probably didn't want to like not have conflict.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be in the same way. Like Eco Challenge didn't cover just like all the teams that were racing really hard because they were just racing really hard and maybe suffering a little bit.
Yeah.
But who wants to see that all the time?
Except other racers.
Right. Exactly. We're our worst critics, right? Like we want to see like, you know, what was that team carrying, eating, you know, using for a pack. But, you know, that was the dynamic with the brigade. It was, were the people that became more of the issue than the task.
So what are you now? Are you an adventure racer again? Are you a paddler? Are you a mountain biker?
I don't know. You know, like, what was I ever?
Well, we'll say you were a good adventure racer.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And, you know, and I think in, you know, I'm every part of my, I feel like each part of your life leads you to the next part. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel as I've gotten older, I've just sort of had to concede to the limits of what my body can do, even though that's not always an easy thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I still run a bunch. I really love paddle boarding. And this year was supposed to be my year to actually start racing and doing some circuit racing in Maine, but COVID got COVID-ed out.
Yeah.
So we'll see what next year brings. But, you know, like, I'm sure the guys that, it, whether or not Eco happens and we get into it or not, they're going to still call me and say, let's go do something and all.
So, I mean, are you... I mean, are you ready for that now to get back into maybe an expedition or two, even if it isn't Eco Challenge?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'd love to. I think, you know, even just doing this 31-mile paddle was something it was great to sort of prove to myself that I could still do it, you know, and just those little accomplishments are something that's really fun for me.
I mean, is that where you're at now? It's just like, I need maybe not to prove it to myself, but I need to show it to myself.
Yeah. You know, it's not like I'm not going for the time or the notoriety or any of that. Because like, you know, people don't know. It was funny, like with even the brigade, like people are like, oh yeah, it's so great you're on a reality show. I'm like, A, people don't know what the brigade was, and B, they don't know who I am. So that's not why I did it. Like if someone sort of dropped that opportunity in your lap, why would you not spend a summer going across Canada for free?
Yeah.
Whether you won the money or not. I mean, you know, it was, and to be honest, like the camera people and the support people and the cooks that worked for the support were just like, as fascinating to meet as the cast was.
Oh yeah. Cause that's a whole new culture you're dealing with. You know, but that's kind of cool. I mean, it's the default adventure racer is, hey, do you want to do something stupid? Yes, I do. Tell me more.
Right. Right. Well, you know, whether that gets to be a better idea as you get older. But, you know, I think the other thing is like I have two boys and it's great to be able to set that example for them and for them to realize that, you know, I went mountain biking for the first time in a long time, like years, with my ninth grader. And he kind of smoked me a little bit, but he was psyched that I could still, you know, I could still ride and – it wasn't like he was, you know, had to wait 10 minutes at the top and he run into his buddies and like, yeah, my mom, you know.
The eye roll, yeah.
Right. The eye roll, but like still proud it was my mom thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I think as a parent, it's just good to show your kids, you know, what's possible.
Do you think that what you do is, do you see it in them yet? Do you see that, yes, I'll do something stupid? Or are they going to be a little more smarter?
You know what's really interesting is I find them way more lazy than me.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be like, I took my son, I ran him up like to Tuckerman's on Mount Washington, you know, after school had started. And he was like, you know, just like complaining for like 3 days.
He's like, Mom, can't we just go to the beach?
Or just like, you know, it's just not his thing so much.
Yeah. But, it's probably sinking in someplace there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I think about when I was a teenager and what influence did my parents have? Like whether they had it or not, I didn't recognize it till decades later.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's hope.
Yeah,
there's hope for the next generation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the question. You obviously, you don't remember, do you?
No.
Okay. As far as I can tell, 2012 Untamed.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that was like my adventure race a decade after I had a kid.
Yeah. So I wouldn't have remembered, but I was so you know, YouTube knows everything about you. So I get these like 10, 12, 13, 14-year-old videos come up in my feed and I'm like, "Ah, I know that person. I'm going to be talking to him." So
oh, so it was a video that you took.
I don't remember if it was mine or if it was Joel, but yeah, I was there that year, so I did well from 11 on, all of them. So, hey, Grant, let's have another Untamed. Yeah, I got in trouble, sort of in trouble last week because I posted that video, and then for some reason another one came up, and I'm like, people are going to think I'm trying to say something. And it was just random. And the next day I get a half a dozen messages. Do you know something about Untamed? And I'm like, no, unfortunately I don't. So.
Oh, like it was going to happen again or something?
Yeah. Cause I, last time Grant announced it on the podcast. So, but nothing going on with Untamed that I know of. So.
No, I don't know any either. I mean, that's the name we were going to race under for Eco. We'll see.
Yeah. With Dave and who else? Did you apply with
Eric Grimm and Jason Erkwitz?
Yeah, so yeah, I think both
they're like, I went, Dave and I, so Dave is 60, I want to say he's 60, maybe 61, and we met and did a run recently. And you know, I've been like maybe 5 or 6 miles, and we went like 14 and a half. And it's just like, yeah, you know, like, luckily, it was a good pace, and we kind of chit-chatted most of it, but it was just like, oh, here we go.
So, well, that makes 3 out of 4 of you that have been on the podcast now, so.
Oh, wait, so who hasn't?
Eric.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's too fast. That's why he hasn't been on it.
Yeah, well. I'm starting to wean away from all the eco challenge people, although I still got a bunch that are coming on, and then that start getting into, I'd like to get some more old schoolers on.
So. Yeah. It was fun to see all the people that are recognized in eco this year.
Yeah.
That was great.
Did you sit there and watch and say, oh, I know that person. Oh, I'm
yeah. Pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah. Yeah. I
feel like it's just inspiring to know that, you know, when was last eco and to have, I mean, like even Nathan Fave is like, you know, it's amazing that he's still going as hard and as strong and,
yeah,
you know, well, it's almost aggravating.
Yeah. After, you know, he's only retired like 6 times. So,
yep.
Yeah. My only claim to fame on the show is we're watching and I'm like, oh, we got to stop. And went back and one of my stickers was on Dan's bike box that you can see for half a second.
That's hilarious.
So, well, what else? What else have you done famously?
I don't know, you know?
You're an old guard and you're a reality TV star. I guess that's probably enough.
Yeah, I feel like I can, you know, I can pass on in a good way.
Okay, one more question. And everybody knows I say one more question and I have. Was there a race back in the day that you didn't get to do that you really wish you had?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think that there were, like, I did Eco Challenge BC and then I did Australia and then I kind of branched off and did other events. And I've kind of wish I had done another Eco in there somewhere.
So probably not Borneo.
No, I'm not bummed that I missed Borneo.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think that there was like Don Mann had a race scheduled for like Alaska at some point. Mm. Which didn't happen, but that would have been, you know, my husband works in Alaska and I've never been there. So, you know, that was one that I missed, but you know, I just feel really fortunate to have been in and out of the sport for the majority of my events when it was mostly an expedition race competition.
Yeah. That's we'll say the first golden age, and maybe now we're in the second golden age.
Right. No, and it's also great to see it come back and to see, like, you know, I don't recognize a lot of the teams these days, but it's fun to see crossover. A lot of times you see someone you don't know, and then you see someone you know on that person's team. And
yeah.
I think what I miss most about it is the community, and I'm grateful that I can pretty much travel anywhere and like know somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I always say. It's like, I can go almost anywhere in the world and know somebody.
Right. Or at like one degree of separation.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. Well, I appreciate it. You're probably going to take the puppy out. She's probably ready to go out.
I don't know. She's sound asleep.
Asleep.
Yep. I guess we were really interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's that one. She's, let's make some supper.
What is she?
Chili. We think she's Australian Shepherd. So she's an adventure race dog. My wife brought her home from Patagonia.
Nice.
She's down there doing the Patagonia adventure race and sends me an email. Can I bring a dog home? Okay. long before Arthur. So
was it just a stray or something?
Yeah, just a street dog.
Oh.
See, you know how street dogs are usually just, they don't want to have anything to do with people?
Right. They're really skittish and stuff.
Yeah, she just adopted Paulette. She was down there before the race. She met some people down there, got, you know, shots and stuff. Did the race, came back. Chili was still there. Then she went to Torres del Paine
That explains the name.
Yeah, it explains the name. And came back and she's like walking in the area and Chili comes up and it's like, I guess she's coming home.
Oh, that's a great story.
It's a good story. We've actually, or she has mostly, probably helped bring like 10 or 12 dogs to the U.S. from Chili.
Oh,
people
nice.
Go down here. So, but yeah, she's ready for supper. So
yeah,
that, this was fun.
You're like 6 o'clock.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's more supper time.
Yeah. I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks. You know?
And I hope it wasn't too painful dragging up the history.
No. I hope that I actually said something valuable.
I think so. I think people will get a kick out of this.
Cut the case, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, they can always fast forward through it.
Right.
No. Okay, well, thanks again, and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Thank you. You too.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
wanna be a punk rock boy.